welcome to Local Talk concerning our COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in central Iowa. Good to get together again to provide facts to our community through technology. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum and with co-host Ann Kinzel. Hello, Ann.
Hey, Pat. Well, here we are, isolating, confining, whatever we want to call it. Yeah. Going out into the world and spreading virus, who knows?
Yeah.
But today we're going to concentrate on radio, and we are going to have our political reporter, Cal Halliburton, interviewing Brett Richards, Republican primary candidate for the 4th congressional seat of the House of Representatives. That's right, everybody, it's getting time to vote on the Republican side. Later, through Zoom, we will be joined by Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, with guest Corey Mellies, Fleet and Facilities Director. And of course, we'll finish up with Anna Banana Magnuson with her heart-to-heart messages from KHOI, the heart of Iowa.
And the weather forecast includes breezy and less humid conditions, with sunny conditions today. It's those that seem to be lacking for quite a while. Yet more showers tomorrow in the afternoon with a high in the 60s. But hang in there. Looks like sunny and in the 80s for the start of June next week. And now let's welcome Dennis Hart, a master at gathering the news this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Hello again. It's good to be with you on this, the last Friday of the month of May. As it has for so many weeks now, the coronavirus and its effects dominated the news on the pages of the Ames Tribune last week. Let's begin with last Friday, when the Trib reported that testing for the virus would be accessible statewide and that anyone who wants to be tested could be. This after Governor Kim Reynolds had allowed movie theaters, zoos, aquariums, museums, and wedding receptions to reopen at 50% capacity last Friday. Bars were allowed to reopen at 50% capacity yesterday, Thursday. The Trib also reported that 50 years ago, last Friday, Ames City Hall had been rocked by a bomb. The concussion from that explosion was felt several blocks away, and windows in a block-and-a-half area around the building were shattered. The bomb went off in a basement window well at what was then the City Hall building on Kellogg Avenue. 9 people were rushed to Mary Greeley Hospital for treatment. Officially, it's still a mystery as to who planted the bomb, but documents released by the FBI under the Freedom of Information Act show the prime suspect to have been a 19-year-old youth who lived at Black Panther headquarters in Des Moines. That man was killed by a bomb he was carrying in Minneapolis 4 months after the Ames bombing. On a much lighter note, last Friday's Trib reported that a new business had opened in Boone. It's the El Valle Meats and Groceries Market on Story Street. It features a rotating selection of hot meals, non-perishable foods, meats, produce, household supplies, candles, pottery, spices, and more. Saturday's paper reported that the Iowa Municipal Band Festival had been canceled for this year because of the coronavirus. The annual event had been held since 1992 and drew hundreds of people from around Boone and from around the state. The festival normally hosts around 8 bands, and attendees were provided food during the event in Herman Park Pavilion in Boone. The Ames Municipal Band had taken part in the festival since its first year. The Ames Band has canceled its season because of the virus pandemic, but plans to host live concerts online, with band members spread out 6 feet apart for social distancing. Also Saturday, word that the Boone River Valley Festival, which had been scheduled to take place this past Memorial Day weekend, but which was canceled because of the pandemic, would have the same musical lineup next year that it was supposed to have this year. That lineup next Memorial Day weekend will feature the Night Ranger Band, along with special guests Skid Row and the Great White Band. Saturday's paper also featured a front-page picture of a couple decorating the grave of a loved one for Memorial Day at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. This year's annual Memorial Day parade and commemoration in Ames was postponed, yes, because of the virus outbreak. And there was word that the Story County Board of Supervisors would discuss possible amendments and residential concerns about the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. That is a land use and growth management plan between Ames, Gilbert, and Story County, and it is set to expire in July of next year. Sunday's paper brought word that more residents in Iowa are out of work now than at any other time in the state's history. The state had a record 10.2% jobless rate in April. From March to April, Iowa lost more than 129,000 jobs, largely due to the coronavirus. And with all this, the state is still doing better than most other states. Nationwide, the jobless rate for April was 14.7%. Also Sunday, Word that more foster families were needed in Story County, even as the coronavirus had posed new challenges in getting them. More than 1,700 Iowa children were referred to and matched with a foster home last year, 40 of them in Story County. The biggest need in the county is for families willing to take sibling groups. Also Sunday, a brief story along with a photo of Saturday's Ames Main Street Farmers Market. It was the first day the market had been officially opened to the public. The market looked different than it has in past years, with vendors required to wear masks and being spaced farther apart from one another because of the coronavirus. The Trib said despite early morning rain, some community members did put on masks and showed up at the market. And the Trib had a feature story about a Vietnam veteran in Roland who decided to honor other vets this past Memorial Day Monday by taking a 75-mile bicycle ride to area cemeteries. Larry Ritland decided to make the ride after learning so many Memorial Day services had been canceled because of the virus pandemic. So he planned to incorporate the Memorial Day observance into his 72nd birthday celebration by cycling through 8 central Iowa communities. He planned to bicycle from Slater through Huxley, Ames, McCallsburg, Garden City, Radcliffe, and Story City, ending up in Roland. Bicycling long distances is nothing new for Ritland. Last summer, he and his wife spent 74 days bicycling across the entire nation, from Washington State to Washington, D.C. Tuesday's paper reported that while the Ames Memorial Day parade and ceremony on Monday had been postponed because of the coronavirus, several Memorial Day activities had taken place. Among them, American Legion Post 37 had conducted 4 rifle salutes to deceased veterans, starting at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. Other rifle salutes took place in the Ontario Cemetery, at Story Memorial Gardens, and at the Ames Veterans Memorial at 5th Street and Grand Avenue. Also Tuesday, word that a new Freedom Rock painting was designed to thank frontline workers who continue their efforts during the coronavirus pandemic. Ray Sorensen is the artist behind the paintings on rocks that are in 87 of Iowa's 99 counties. In Story County, the Freedom Rock is at 2nd Street and Trotter Boulevard in Maxwell. Just one of those rocks, in Adair County, is repainted every year just before Memorial Day. Sorensen plans to have Freedom Rocks in all of Iowa's counties by next year. There was more Tuesday, including word that commencement season had started for Story County school districts. Many of the districts have postponed commencement to a later date in the summer because of the coronavirus, and those districts have backup plans for virtual ceremonies. But last weekend, Ballard High seniors were able to walk across the stage in front of classmates and family members to receive their diplomas. And commencement ceremonies also took place at Gilbert High School and in the Collins-Maxwell School District. In Ames, the district has unveiled 3 potential options for a future commencement ceremony. Nevada seniors will have both prom and graduation during the same weekend in July or August, and Colonesco's graduation is set to take place June 28th, as is commencement in the Roland Story School District. And one more story of note from this past Tuesday, word that after 38 years of teaching third grade in the Boone School District, Dawn Lester will be retiring at the end of this school year. Lester spent 22 years teaching at the Lincoln Elementary School and the past 16 years at Franklin Elementary. He also has served as a coach for various teams, including the boys' track teams, the ninth grade volleyball teams, and as the head volleyball coach in Ogden. Wednesday's Trib reported that starting this coming Monday, establishments including casinos, amusement parks, skating rinks, skate parks, bowling alleys, and outdoor playgrounds and outdoor performance venues would be allowed to reopen. In addition, spectators will be able to visit speedways and tracks, but only at 50% capacity. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds made that announcement and said she thought Iowans were willing and able to take personal responsibility to protect themselves and others from the coronavirus. Bars, wineries, and breweries were allowed to open yesterday at 50% capacity. The governor said live bands and musical performers could perform at both bars and restaurants. Meanwhile, there was word that Iowa State University had announced that no more than 30,000 fans likely would be allowed inside Jack Trice Stadium this fall because of social distancing guidelines involving the coronavirus. Athletic department officials said single-game tickets likely would not be sold and that the only way to get into a game would be to buy a season ticket. In a related story, word Wednesday that most events for this summer's Iowa games in Ames had been canceled. Those games have been held in Ames for 30 years. Athletes from across the state compete in Olympic-style competitions such as baseball, soccer, basketball, canoeing, and billiards. Some non-contact events will still be held or rescheduled. And there was a report that a sushi restaurant from the Des Moines area had opened in Ames, but only for curbside pickup for now. Wasabi began taking online dinner orders this week. In-house dining will not be allowed for a while because of the coronavirus. Thursday's paper, yesterday's, brought word that the Furman Aquatic Center in Ames will remain closed this summer and that the city's annual Independence Day fireworks show had been canceled because of the coronavirus. Those decisions were made by the city council on Tuesday night. The council also decided to open the municipal pool at Ames High and the Brookside Park waiting pool, but it's not clear when that will happen. The Ames Dog Park, city playgrounds, and the skate park across from Brookside Park will reopen this coming Monday. The Trib also reported that as of Wednesday, 95 people in Story County had tested positive for the coronavirus. Also yesterday, word that the Ames Library had launched a curbside delivery service. Library members can request books and schedule a curbside pickup. The library building itself won't reopen until July 1st. There was also word that students studying at the Des Moines Area Community College would be able to see and interact with classmates and instructors in a real-time virtual format. It's a virtual learning option for students that uses video to give them a sense of being in class together during instruction. Students are able to set aside specific times to meet for a class as well as to interact with class members. And there was also a report yesterday that the Ames Police Department was urging residents to be on the alert after a string of vehicle burglaries at various parks. Several vehicles had been broken into at Ada Hayden Park and Moore Memorial Park, and police believe those break-ins are connected. And among the stories in today's paper, Friday's, the latest figures in Story County involving the coronavirus pandemic. And that, my friends, is your look at what made news this past week on the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, already planning my return trip to this very seat on Monday when I'll have word on what's been making news around Iowa. In the meantime, please, stay safe and stay healthy.
And thank you, Dennis Hart, for the Week in the News with a music interlude from Frank Zappa, Peaches in Regalia.
So our next segment is KHOI political reporter Cal Halberton, who interviewed political candidate Brett Richards.
It's our pleasure today to be talking with Dr. Brett Richards. Dr. Richards is seeking the Republican nomination as a candidate for the United States House of Representatives, representing the 4th District of Iowa. Growing up in Irwin, Iowa, Brett worked in hog confinement operations, the family gas station and convenience store, and two paper routes. He graduated from Irwin Kirkman Manila High School, also known as IKM, where he met his wife, Jill. At graduation, Brett applied for an Army ROTC scholarship to the University of Iowa, and in 1995, with a civil engineering degree, got married and was commissioned as a combat engineering officer. He served in posts in the U.S. and Germany. After returning home, he developed the family convenience store business into 12 stores across western Iowa and created over 300 jobs in rural communities. Brett has served in several volunteer community activities, including councilman and mayor of Irwin, and he chairs the board of Manning Regional Healthcare Center. Brett continued his education with a master's degree in leadership and a doctorate in human capital management. He currently teaches doctoral students at Creighton University. Brett and Jill have 3 children and reside in Irwin, Iowa. Brett, please tell our listeners something about yourself they'll not find on your website or with a search engine.
Well, you've got most of it right there that you just read. That really is my life. I think it's pretty typical of how most rural Americans grow up. You know, grow up working pretty hard, and I did marry my high school sweetheart. That's usually my little bit of trivia that I add to it, but you had that too. I like to ride bicycle, you know, when I can.
Do you go on ride bike?
I have. In my younger years, I have. I don't have time to right enough to do that anymore, but I enjoy that.
Well, yes, that's quite an adventure in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yes.
Well,
yeah.
As you talk with people around the district, what are their most frequent concerns?
Yeah, you know, they say that our politicians always promise us that they're going to fix everything, and what they really want is for the government to be out of our lives and make sure so that they can have their family have the opportunity to come back to rural America. Whether they do or not, it's a different question. But they want to make sure that their kids and their grandkids could have an opportunity to come back. That's what's on their minds a lot.
They just want to be able to settle back in a small town community.
Yeah.
And be comfortable there and not be bothered by a lot of outside
stuff. When I think of my kids, I got a 17-year-old who we just took to, University of Iowa for a college visit last week. And he's going to be a Hawkeye, it looks like. We kind of start him out that way, I guess. And I know we're here in Ames.
That's we won't hold it against him.
Well, good. I appreciate that because actually, I think maybe my youngest son might be looking at him. He wants to be a vet, so maybe we'll get a Cyclone out of it or not. I don't know yet, but when I think about it, my kids, I want them, I realize the Irwin town of 350 might not be a place they come back to. There might not be those opportunities that I had when I came back, but I want them at least to have the opportunity to come to Ames or Carroll or Harlan and do something and raise their family in the same way that I was raised, with good Iowa values. That's what we want. We want to be able to have that opportunity to give them a chance.
So there aren't particular issues then that people bring up to you when you visit with them?
Yes, there are. Sure, absolutely. A lot of it goes about the news of the day, of course. In a Republican primary, the Second Amendment's very important. We do get to talk about budget once in a while. Now, that's something you would think conservatives would bring up a lot, but it seems to get forgotten in today's world. We're $23 trillion in debt. And last fall, when we passed a budget, Republicans and Democrats voted to add $1 trillion deficit, and we didn't talk about it as in a national discussion. We should have, but we didn't. So Iowans do bring it up. Healthcare comes up quite a bit. Those are some of the main issues I do.
Well, let's take those then.
Okay, good.
What about the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms? You say that's something that comes up?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I do think the Second Amendment's very important. I do think it protects all others, really. I think the Second Amendment is about the fact that someday our government might not fear the people and might not care what we think. Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully that's 500-600 years from now, but I think that Second Amendment's very important to have for us as citizens. They're concerned about red flag laws and what gets talked about
red
there.
Red flag laws.
Yes. They want red flag laws, something whenever you can, they'll say, hey, we've got somebody here that might have some mental problems or some other things. And so they red flag it in the systems, what they're talking about there, the legislators and the lawmakers that want to do that. Iowans know that.
So that would prevent them from being able to carry a firearm?
Correct, sir, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But Iowans know that we can look after the people that are ill, and the sheriffs tell me that they can take the weapons away from someone that's not well at the moment. So I don't think we need more laws to change that.
Some folks object to having magazines with large capacities of ammunition. My former brother-in-law, great hunter, he said, look, if you need more than 3 rounds of ammunition in your rifle, you're not a very good shot.
Well, remember what the intent of the Second Amendment is. It's not to hunt deer necessarily. Now, of course, it's there so we can hunt deer. It's for when that government does overreach 500 or 600 years from now, that the government will fear the people, that they won't take our rights away from us.
So that would then be the basis for having military weapons in the hands of civilians.
We don't have military weapons in the civilian arsenal. We have most of them are single-shot automatic or semi-automatics. It's different than an automatic weapon.
I see what you mean, yeah. You did mention health care.
Yes, health care.
How do people view that? Do they think they want to keep their current insurance or do they want to have a single-payer system like in Canada or completely nationalized like in Great Britain?
The people I talk to don't want a single-payer. They want to make sure that their insurance is affordable, and there are some ways that I think we can affect that change. One of them is to open up across state lines. That's something that Republicans and Democrats have talked about. When I say open up across state lines, I mean allow me to go buy insurance health care insurance from someone in California, just like you can auto insurance. But I think the underlying problem isn't necessarily insurance. It's the cost of the health care. And there's a lot of things going on there. It's prescription drugs. It's administrative burden. It's things that I think we can find a bipartisan agreement to fix if we take the time to do it.
For example, in that area, could we then have Medicare negotiate for drug prices so that we could lower the drug prices?
Sure. I think that's something we should look at and do. I think there's probably agreement to how we do that. But beyond that, one of the problems is that the intellectual property owned by these drug companies gives them a stranglehold on the market. You know, they have the right to make money off of their investment.
I don't think anybody's questioning that right.
The problem is that they have the monopoly for so long in the United States that you can buy it cheaper than elsewhere, like in Canada. You've heard the stories about someone they get for $50 and it's $5,000 in the United States. It's the same drug. Well, why is that? Well, it's because they have a monopoly in the United States. So let's allow them to re-import to the United States so we can buy the same drug. That will actually force the companies to spread that intellectual property development cost to everyone that buys that drug, whether it's in Sweden or Mexico or Canada or wherever. And that's a substantial amount of money in our system.
There are a whole list of things I've got here. In order to go forward, we might have to, the federal government might need to raise additional money, and that there are a variety of ways that might be approached. On the other hand, some folks would say there's already plenty of money there. We just have to change how it's prioritized. What's your feeling?
Well,
I've
fallen. I don't think we ever have a revenue problem. I mean, we can tax our way into oblivion if we want. The problem is we don't prioritize. We don't know when to stop spending on something. President Obama talked about how there's a government regulation that regulates salmon. Well, there's 17 departments that regulate that salmon. Do we need 17 departments, or do we need just some common sense to apply to those things? I don't remember the specifics of it. That one just sticks in my head, that we had 17 government bureaucracies involved in regulating salmon. Maybe one's enough, so we definitely continue to spend, whenever we add a new fee or a new bureaucracy that we spend money on, it never goes away. That's the problem.
Well, there's another money thing that comes up sometimes in these discussions, and that is all the money in politics right now.
Sure.
And, for example, with Mike Bloomberg jumping into the race, and he's got more money than God at this point, it sounds like. And what about restricting money in politics?
You know, it's something that – how do you give a challenger – a fair playing field if you do that. Now, an incumbent's name recognition is worth a lot of money without spending anything.
A huge amount of money.
So how do you give someone that wants to get in a fair playing field, if you will, if you restrict the amount of money? Bloomberg, I don't like the fact that he has that much money to spend either. I just don't know how to fix it. Maybe you do. I'd love to have the idea.
Well, I don't think
I think we need to reform it. I just don't have the answer right now. Yeah, because the money's tough in politics, and I think it does
create
problems.
I'm sure you're feeling some of that with this beginning this campaign of yours.
Yeah. 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 Well, my wife and I have self-funded most of our campaign, but we do appreciate the money, the contributions we do get in a lot. But it is a challenge, though.
There's a lot of talk about minimum wage, and you've run a good-sized business. How do you feel about that?
Well, I remember when the state went up to $7.50 now. It was 5.25, I believe, and it went up. I remember we took a look at how much we were paying our entry-level people above minimum wage, and this sticks in my mind. It's been a number of years now, but I think it was like 23% above. That's where our entry-level people that did get the lowest wage we provided. After 2 or 3 years went by in the increase, we were paying our people about 23 to 25% above that minimum. So I think the marketplace does find a work itself out. For us, I guess that's how it worked out. I understand the challenges. I guess what I want people to do is get more skills. A welder Right now, coming out of college, get a certificate can make $120,000 a year. So, yeah. And a tradesman, you know, whether a plumber or electrician, someone like that, which is something that, so there are ways to better yourself financially in our country.
Are you still involved with your business?
No, mom and dad, about 4 years ago, I guess, they were ready to retire. Mm-hmm. And Jill and I were trying to figure out how to go forward because we thought, looking at it, we probably needed to be 100 stores, not a dozen. Be fortunate enough to have a buyer. And so it worked out for us that we did sell our convenience stores in our fueling business. So ever since then, I've been teaching at Creighton University.
I see.
Which you noted already,
yes,
too.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. What is it that you would like to say to the folks who are listening in? What would you like to tell them about where you want to go with this job as representing the 4th District of Iowa?
By and large, everybody says that we've got to stop sending career politicians to D.C. who ultimately just seem to care more about their career than our country. And I've already pledged to serve 5 terms and come home back to Irwin. So you come get me if I serve longer than 5 terms. That's 10 years. I think I can get something done in 10 years to represent our district, make our country a little bit better, and allow the next person to go and do the same thing. That's what Iowans want, too. We don't want to have this ruling class. We want our average citizen. We are not governed by our betters. We're governed by our peers. That's what
you're planning to do.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, you've got to win that first election, which is the primary. How are you going to do that?
Well, you know, by doing what we've been doing for the last year, by going out to county fairs, by going to any club they'll have me, coming on radio stations, talking to you and your viewers, your listeners, and just letting people meet me and let me meet them, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how we'll get it done. You know, today I gave you the scoop, and today we had a filing, the start of the filing deadline, and we needed 1,800 signatures to get on the ballot. And to the Secretary of State's office this morning, we took 5,222 mm-hmm. signatures.
That's terrific.
So that tells you how hard my team and I have been working.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's no small achievement. That's a lot of signatures.
That's a lot of signatures, and that, I would suggest that means you've been not only door-to-door, but also you've been to some county conventions and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, if the you said county convention, but the county fairs, I mentioned that briefly.
Sure.
And there's 39 counties
right.
in the district. It's huge. And there's only 37 county fairs left in those 39 counties.
Uh-huh.
We went to 30 of them.
Good for you.
We are exhausted after in August, you know, when those started ending. But that allowed me to talk to thousands of Iowans.
Oh, yes.
You know, had conversations about everything.
Or I'm just going to speculate a little bit politically with you. Let's suppose the, what is it, 4 or 5 of you that are vying.
5 total, including Congressman King.
Including the congressman. Well, you know, you could get down to the election, the primary election, and not have a majority.
It's possible.
My guess is it's closer to probable at this point. So if you don't have a majority, then you're going to go to a district convention.
Correct.
Which is where the current incumbent first got his nomination.
That's correct.
At a district convention.
That's right.
That could occur again.
It might.
That might suggest that you folks that are running for this might want to coordinate, or if not coordinate, think about how you're going to capture enough delegates at that district convention in order to get the nomination.
Well, you know, the great thing about how the party does it is we have been talking to those people already because we've talked to so many Iowans, of course. But so we are absolutely talking to every Iowan we can because I think I can get to 35% plus one vote if it's split.
That's
like
what
that.
You need.
Yes. Well,
to
I
get
mean,
the
there
nomination.
Is a, there's a path where someone could win it 51% and I have 35% still. But
Oh, yeah.
So if no one gets the majority
uh-huh.
And 35% plus one vote, then it does not go to convention.
I see. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Well,
explain that a little
bit. It did that one time.
Well, it freaking
10 years
does.
Ago, right?
You know, Congressman David Young actually here, was it several years ago.
Yeah,
he did that too. They went to convention for him. It would have been 4 years ago.
Well, probably. It might have been. Was that his first run?
It was
his first run.
Yes.
And he wasn't the he was far from the majority winner.
Correct. Yeah. He was like six or something, I think.
Quite a brokered convention.
And then the Secretary of Ag here recently did that too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it does happen.
So it'll be fascinating to see how that works out.
Yeah, but everyone can get out and vote and 35% plus one vote, and then we won't need to worry about that part.
That's true. Then you won't. Well, are there any other issues you'd like to touch on?
Well, I sure appreciate you taking the time.
It's been our pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Yeah, I guess if I can mention my website.
Oh, please
RichardsForCongress.com.
Uh-huh.
It's RichardsForCongress.com.
Okay. Yeah, some people use the number four.
Yes.
But you're using F-O-R.
Yes.
Okay, good. And let me repeat that. It's been our pleasure today to be talking with Dr. Brett Richards, who is seeking the Republican nomination as a candidate for the United States House of Representatives, representing the 4th District of Iowa. Thanks again, Brett.
Thank you.
And you're listening to KHOI Community Radio on Local Talk, COVID-19 Response with host Ann Kinzel, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. Let's have a music break and be right back to Local Talk. And in our quest to strengthen our community through communication that includes Zoom technology, Ann, who do we welcome next?
We've got Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Corey Mellis, Facilities Director. Susan, what can you tell us what's going on in the city today?
I guess in general, I just welcome everybody to Friday. It looks like a beautiful, beautiful weekend ahead, and I wish everybody a safe and happy weekend. We are still in the process of implementing many of the decisions made at Tuesday City Council meeting. One of the reasons I wanted Corey to come in on today is because in his role as Fleet and Facilities Manager, many of the steps that we need to take to reopen sort of fall under his realm. And we, as you know, have a lot of city facilities, including those that are going to be opening in the next few weeks all the way till July 1st, including City Hall, the Ames Public Library, Ames Municipal Pool, the Ames ISU Ice Arena, not to mention the playgrounds that will start on June 1st and the skate park on June 1st. Some of those fall under different departments, but actually preparing facilities and looking at what it's going to take to safely reopen, that really is Corey's area.
That's a huge responsibility. Corey, now that we're looking at some reopening dates for facilities, my first question is, how do you decide how to proceed with a particular facility? Where do you get information? Once you get that information, how do you put it into play?
Yeah, I think what we do is we talk to the departments or the divisions, how they're going to interact with customers. That's probably the biggest issue. Talk to like customer service that deals with utility building. You know, I've also talked to the library about what their thoughts are. So we're looking at things like sneeze guards and how to help people keep their distance and, you know, working with Susan on kind of signage throughout the city to have a clear message to the public what we expect in our facilities.
When you set up those kind of things, what I'm really curious about is who's helping you out? I mean, the city of Ames doesn't have a Department of Public Health, nor does it have its own CDC. So where do you get information that helps you make decisions about facilities?
Yeah, we have a great working group. We call it our kind of EOC, our Emergency Operations Center. So our fire department, we also have our wellness coordinator for the city who's been on top of the CDC regulations. So with that team, we've kind of went through the regulations from CDC, Iowa Department of Public Health, and kind of use those to kind of guide how we're setting up our facilities.
Now, those are kind of national level directives. So they're kind of like one size fits all in a way. How does that play out with, say, CDC directives going to, on one hand, New York City, on the other hand, Ames, Iowa? Do you find that the information is always useful for a jurisdiction like ours?
Well, I think it's, like you said, it's kind of a one size fits all. So I think as you get into some of the things we do, not clear cut regulations, and I think, you know, you'll see that with parks and recreation as they start to open up, ice arena, things like that get a little more complicated, a little more local based on how we think people are going to use them and how we think we can keep them the safest.
Are there any Iowa agencies or sources of information, Iowa specific, that you turn to help you make these kind of decisions?
I think right now it's just the Iowa Department of Public Health. We also have a kind of a team that meets with Greeley, the city, and some other partners, Iowa State, that talk about how we think we should move forward.
Are there any particular buildings or operations that, say, cause you more sleepless nights than others?
Well, I think the two biggest ones are, for me, are City Hall. That's a pretty big one. The library, they kind of run their own, but I've been able to kind of coordinate with them and see what they're doing, because obviously they will probably have the most public contact out of any of our facilities. We've been talking to Parks and Recreation about the ice arena and things like that. So I think those that have a large customer base and different uses, those are going to be more difficult to figure out how they're going to work. And we'll have to maybe look at how it goes and, you know, be able to change on the fly a little bit.
So what are some of your biggest concerns, let's say, with City Hall?
I think it's access. City Hall has historically been pretty open to the public. Lots of points of entry for people to come in and kind of find someone to help them get them to the right spot. So I think for us, it's about the public flow through that building. It's also one of the things is, you know, our dispatch center is in City Hall. So we want to kind of keep them protected and make sure, you know, they work in kind of a close area. So something like this could be, you know, devastating to them. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, you know, taking a building that's historically been very open to the public and opening it to the public, but making sure it's safe for, you know, the public and also the staff working in there.
How does it work? You're the facilities and fleet director. Do you go through buildings and facilities with your peers in other departments to make decisions? Who has the final word? How something should proceed?
I think we take a team approach. We kind of work with the departments and what their needs are and what our capabilities are in the time frame. Obviously, moving back to July gave us more time, but there's some things that, you know, major changes we're probably just not going to be able to implement. But, you know, things like sneeze guards or putting stickers on the floor to help separate people, those are things we can do. So we kind of work as a team approach, try to do the best we can.
This is kind of a parochial question, but for example, in City Hall, there's what I call the world's smallest gym, that little tiny weight room. What about places like that? Are there going to be places in the city that just might not be open because simply one could not create an environment that would be reasonably safe?
Yeah, I think that's something we'll have to work on as we look at the regulations and what, you know, the guidance is. Things like the auditorium right now would probably fall in that category with the crowd size. So I think it's things like that that we'll have to keep an eye on and see if we do think it's something we can do. Can we meet those guidelines? Can we disinfect as required? So those are definitely things we're going to have to work on as we go and see if we can meet those criteria.
And if I could interject for a moment here, please. One of the things that you have to think about is, will people want to come back? And that's another one of those unknowns. There's so many variables with this. As Corey pointed out, we need the public to feel safe, but we also need employees to feel safe. But as we have learned over the last few weeks, as we've moved services more online, we think that there's probably a part of the population that will feel that they don't need to come back. And so when you're making these preparations and buildings, you're sort of flying in the dark because you don't really know what the absolute outcome will be. Maybe people don't want to access the buildings anymore. Maybe they'll be happy with the way that they have reestablished their patterns of doing business with the city. And for things like the auditorium, we just don't have a good sense of people's comfort level. Is it, I mean, how do you feel? Are you ready to go to a live concert?
No, I'm not. You know, one of the joys of my life is actually Ames Park and Rec. I'm an avid user of the world's smallest gym in the past and have attended classes. And that brings a lot of joy to my life. But I have to say that right now, I'm not comfortable stretching, lifting weights, sharing a mat with somebody in a little tiny gym or going to a class. What is the distance, for example, that one is 6 feet reasonable when everybody's running around and sweating and breathing deeply? Who knows? I don't know. Nobody's told me. So yeah, it's a great question. And it's something that's probably not fixed in time. People's comfort will change as the numbers go up and down, I think. So you raise an interesting point.
So I feel like that possibly gives us a little bit more time. While our hard opening date is July 1st, I'm not expecting throngs of people to come flowing in through the door. And at City Hall, if we're looking at access and we say, well, to have more control, we're going to have everybody enter through Clark Avenue as opposed to all the other entries that they used to be able to access. Well, are we worried there's going to be a huge bottleneck in front of Clark Avenue? I'm not really worried about that. I don't think that's going to happen because I think people are cautious right now. And we'll have a little time to, as Corey said, grow and be a little bit in reactive mode where we have to kind of assess each day what's working, what isn't working, and perhaps build up.
Corey, you're for our purposes, an expert in this. I have this burning question I have to ask you. I hear a lot, or read a lot in the media about businesses and governments engaging in something called a, quote, deep cleaning, close quote. And I have no idea what that means. And I was wondering if you could describe for our listeners from your vantage as a facilities professional, what is a deep cleaning?
Well, I think deep cleaning for us would mean you're really getting in and wiping down every surface in an area. Usually our cleaners might come in and wipe a counter. They're not going to wipe a person's desk. They're not going to wipe, you know, the walls, the, you know, door frames, things like that. So that's what a deep cleaning is. We have done some deep cleaning. We just recently purchased special sprayers. They're electrostatic. So when you spray it, they're kind of charged and they stick to surfaces, the disinfectant. So that's something we're going to do to kind of deep clean our areas, use those sprayers to do that. So it's really thinking about every surface that someone might have touched versus just kind of your general cleaning, which is to make it look clean.
Thanks for letting me know what that is, because I've been wondering for weeks, what is a professional deep cleaning? Very helpful. Corey, as you move forward with reopening, what are some of the things that you see as possible, you know, victories for the city in reopening facilities? What do you think that is the most important thing you can bring to the public?
I think just to let them know that we're doing the best we can to keep them protected and provide the services that we provide. I think Susan made a great point. We also want our employees to feel comfortable. If our employees are comfortable, they'll provide better service to those customers. So I think that's the main thing, to let them know we're here to provide services. We're doing the best we can to kind of prevent the spread of this in Ames and be there for them to still provide the services they need.
Now, in terms of your fellow facilities professionals, have you seen much discussion about how things might change in a more permanent fashion because of the virus? What are you seeing in the future?
I think, kind of looking at, the trades overall, I think you could see a move away from kind of the open office environment. You might see people being more uncomfortable with that, getting more space and areas for employees. You might see, like we talked about, better regulated access for buildings. So I think those are probably the two main things, kind of how buildings are set up, how they're used, how they're accessed.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to miss the cube farm if it goes away. And now let's turn to maybe the little bit darker side. As a fleet and facilities professional, what's your greatest worry in these times?
What worries me is maybe having, right now would be, maybe a staff outbreak or something like that in an area of a building. We have quite a few buildings, quite a few employees. So that's probably my biggest fear. Can we react quickly enough to make sure it doesn't impact our service levels?
Speaking of employees, cleaning at Ames facilities, that's done under contract?
Yes.
Are you having any trouble finding workers or your contractors finding workers to ramp up services as things open?
Not at this time. That'll be something we'll have to discuss as we ramp up for opening. If we're going to take cleaning to a newer level, can they meet that demand? We think they can right now.
Susan and Corey, this question is kind of directed to both of you. Let's say that hypothetically, things take a turn for the worse in Iowa, and we begin to see a relatively dramatic spike in cases, perhaps ICUs filled, and it's another week before there's a city council meeting. How could the city react on an emergency basis if it needed to close facilities?
We have the option of we can hold council meetings with 24 hours notice, and there may even be more leeway in an actual emergency situation. So we've had to call the council together quickly. And if there was some measures that required policy decisions, that's not an issue. Looking into the future, I can stay awake a lot of nights thinking about all the what ifs. And all we can do is best prepare for those things that we think could be challenging ahead of us. But as Corey said, losing staff to the virus through an outbreak, a concentrated outbreak. We've looked at contingency planning. We look at how we can cross-train employees, but we're a relatively small organization compared to other government. I think we're in very good shape, and I hope that the public has faith in us to keep them safe, because we do spend a lot of time training and practicing and thinking about these things. But, you always have to look out for that one thing you didn't think about. So there will be more sleepless nights, I'm sure, in our futures.
Well, thank you both for spending time with us today, and Susan for bringing in guests all week. I think one of the great things that KHOI can do is provide local residents with an idea of how our institutions and our folks are navigating these interesting times. And we appreciate both your professionalism and your willingness to get up early in the morning and share your thoughts with us. So have a wonderful weekend, and we look forward to a reopened but slightly different approach to city government.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you, Ann.
Yeah, thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Corey Mellies, the Fleet and Facilities Director. I'd like to also hearken the beautiful comments that Ann just made. Thank you for all your service to the Ames community very much. So it's time. Is there time for Anna Banana?
Always time for Anna Banana, right?
Right. Great.
So this week, a friend shared her New York Times Magazine with me and stuck a yellow post-it note on page 10 that read, "This would make a great heart-to-heart message," and she was right. So it's a poem selected by Naomi Shihab Nye and Susan Leslie Moore's poem, "That Place Where You Open Your Hands," instantly offers forthright presence, a personal voice making honest admissions. It's a poem that opens hands and heart to a listener, no double talk or cryptic chatings, including a turn on a familiar song line, a spatial obsession, and that disquieting image of stranded polar bears. Then the very original cure of being kept in line by something familiar outside the window, This poem suits our time of roller coastering moods. So the poem by Susan Leslie Moore titled, I Have Tried Hard to Have Appropriate Feelings. I have folded them away like sweaters, kept my distance from the moon, visited the sick. I am proud of the life in my head. Nobody knows the garden I've seen. I am tender with the suburb. Some days, even the ceiling worries me, the way it keeps the roof on. I only cry when the polar bears get to me, the ones stranded on the melting ice. Otherwise, I'm kept in line by the steady curve of my driveway, the tight fist of the rose. I can easily converse about the sweet peas and our eventual disintegration. The sky has more to say to me than I could ever hear, given the restricted space between houses. Frogs sing at night and the whine of the train. So yes, that was indeed a great heart-to-heart message, so thank you. And the next heart-to-heart message is brought to you by Alyssa Sinwell. Alyssa lives in Cedar Falls, is a supported employment coordinator at Goodwill of Central Iowa, and she studies at Drake University, and she sent this heart-to-heart message. Sometimes in life, you will get these rare, sacred moments when people are real and open and honest with you. They will tell your story with shaky hands and tears in their eyes. Your heart will break for them, and your heart will break with them. This is their moment. Let them have it. Don't tell them the story of how you lost a loved one too, or had an addiction too, or had a bad relationship too. Don't get me wrong, that matters, but it doesn't matter now. Remind them they are not alone and assure them you are coming from a place that has gone through similar struggles. But just don't say you totally get it, because you don't. Love and listen, friends, love and listen. And the next heart-to-heart message is from KHOI's very own Brett Brinkmeyer. Brett is the host of Firsthand Poetry and is a talented poet and writer, which you will be able to tell from this heart-to-heart message. Racism and hatred seem to be everywhere. They're so loud. Love is even more present and unquenchable. It may take a while for violence to settle, and it will emerge again, I think. But love never ceases or runs away. It's always available and will tend to the wounds, emotional and physical, inflicted during times of chaos. It's an ongoing work stretched to the ends of our lives. I have confidence that justice does not go unaddressed, whether in this life or the next, behind the curtains or in front, and it is served by love. Love will always be able to say, I was there, freely available, and I witnessed what was done. In the darkest recesses of my own being, and my thoughts and actions, past, present, and future, love was always available, and still is, and will be. Trust, believe, grow, learn, change, love. I know it's possible because of how much of it I've been given and forgiven already, and how much ground there is yet to cover. Yet I believe that everything will be restored one way or another. We just haven't seen it yet. So thank you, Brett, and thank you, Alyssa. And I hope that these heart-to-heart messages move us into this weekend with hope, love, and caring for one another, and to honor, cherish, and learn from our stories and experiences so that we can indeed get to a better place. So if you'd like to respond to any of these messages or want to share what is in your heart with us, I invite you to call or text Anna Banana at 515-809-0077, or you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart to heart in the subject line. But if you don't want to write your own message, you can do what my friend did. Just drop me a magazine with a post-it note, and I'll read your heart to heart message. It doesn't have to be an original. So thank you for listening to these individual heart-to-heart messages that connect us to a community of love, care, and support that is KHOI, the heart of Iowa, which is you and me.
Thank you so much, Anna Banana, for another welcome installment of KHOI Heart-to-Heart Messages. Well, you just got to love your messages of the heart and what they bring to the Ames community. Anna Magnuson, thank you. Local Talk Special COVID-19 Response Program airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Fridays at KHOY 89.1 FM. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button. The views of KHOY's guests do not necessarily reflect the views of KHOY. This is nonprofit, nonpartisan media. We do provide a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information.
And remember that you can hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Yes, KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program has been engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael, as always. And we want to thank Lynn Carey for her production efforts in getting us interesting guests, and Dennis Hart for the news, and Cal Halberton for his political reports. And also, of course, we want to recognize Brett Richards, Susan Guiazza, and Corey Malice from the City of Ames. And I've been your host, Ann Kinzel, with co-host Pat Schlarbon.
Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And we also heard Peaches in Regalia by Frank Zappa. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
Now, I forgot to honor Anna Banana at the end of this week for being in here all week long. So remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Don't forget to donate, and thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.